What's up, guys? Welcome back to the East Coast Podcast. We have a super special guest today. Alicia McCarville's in the building.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the podcast. We'll dive right in. So where'd you grow up?
So I was born in Toronto, which I only spent 2 years of my life there. My mom is from Toronto. My dad's from Cape Breton. They met on a train going in between Cape Breton and Toronto and then ended up in Halifax. So I grew up mostly, the majority of my childhood that I remember was set in Spryfield. So that's where I spent and have the most memories. I was in French immersion growing up all the way through to like my second year of university. And I went to J. L. Lisley for high school.
That's awesome.
That's where I met Scott. I was in high school.
And when did you guys first meet?
We met in grade 10. Like grade 10s meet. Like I actually had a crush on his best friend. I emceed his best friend's wedding and he stood in his best friend's wedding. Wow. So like very amicable, but I actually was, shout out to Mitchell. But I had a crush on Mitch and Mitch gave me Scott's email address. And I think that was his like, yeah, I'm not interested in you, but here's my best friend type of thing. And Scott and I talked on MSN. He played hockey. He was one of the three grade tens that made the hockey team the first year, I think. And I barely knew him, but I made him a sign. And then I used to go to all of his hockey games. Like we had barely ever spoke and I'd go to the hockey games with this little crayon made sign that said, let's go Scotty. You're a hottie. Awesome. And then we not to get it too deep into our story, but we just became like best friends. We hung out all the time. I didn't really give him a choice. And then here we are 15 years later.
That's awesome. So it started back in the MSN days.
Yes, MSN. I still have printouts of our conversations from MSN. Which is such a nice thing to have. But yeah, MSN, we used to like avoid each other at school. So like, even if our lockers were relatively close to each other, we'd see each other in the hallways. We'd just pretend like we didn't know each other. And then we'd rush home, get on MSN and talk to each other all night.
That's awesome.
So yeah, we did a lot of that for a year and a half. And then like we were hanging out and we had PAL. Did you guys have PAL in high school?
Yeah.
Physically active lifestyle. Yeah. So we had PAL together and we were like PAL partners. We shared a locker. Like we weren't dating at this point. We were just really good friends. And then long story short, we kissed and didn't talk for like a week because we were just like, oh shit, like what do you do now? And then that's the rest is really kind of history for us.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming, but yeah, we both grew up in Spryfield. He was in more like, he went to like John W, like off of like in Spryfield, but they wouldn't say they're from Spryfield.
Another community.
Yeah. Like just off. So we were close to each other growing up pretty much our whole childhood and never ran into each other until we got into high school. But I had a really good, I have a little brother and a little sister. And my parents own their own business, which has been like the coolest thing because they've literally been there for everything and anything I've ever done, which is pretty cool. I'm trying to think if there's anything else important from my childhood, but yeah, I had a good childhood. I had a good upbringing. Yeah.
What did you want to be when you were younger?
A teacher, actually. Sister's a teacher now. So, I wanted to be a teacher. I think I just liked the idea of, I had a lot of inspiring teachers, like teachers who I still am in contact with today, like and see and have on Facebook and still interact with, like elementary school teachers that just really inspired me to be myself. Like I was bullied when I was in elementary school and I had a lot of really important adults in my life and most of them were teachers. So I think that was why I wanted to be a teacher.
Yep.
But now with what I do and what I've done in the past, I think I just really enjoyed like inspiring people and making a difference in people's lives, which is what a lot of teachers did for me. So
You have a lot of respect for teachers as well. They really shape us as kids and that kind of ultimately determines what you think you can become in your life and what you can't. So yeah,
shout out to
all the nice teachers out there.
Yeah, yeah. I had a lot of really good ones.
That's awesome. I saw you recently moved. How's the new crib?
It is so nice. We're going from 950 square feet to 2,600 square feet.
Awesome.
So it's a big change for us. But we finished packing everything yesterday and I didn't think I was going to be as emotional as I was closing the doors to the other place. But that place got me through like the three hardest yet most accomplishing years of my life. So I was like, yeah, I didn't expect to be as, because we're so excited to be in our new spot, I didn't expect to be as emotional as I was leaving yesterday, but the new space is just too big, but so nice, because like we needed the space, and I actually have my own office, which is nice. Not what I had, and I've learned quickly throughout the pandemic and through work from home is that, and especially with the type of job that I do, content creating and influencing, is like I don't really separate my work from my life. Like it's hard to do that. Sure. So I would be having meetings in my old place in the middle of my living room, in my bedroom, like you know, wherever I could get a quiet space, and never really being able to shut it off, because I would just close my computer, but I would still be in the same space. So this place gives me an actual office that I can go into, work, and then step out of and close the door and kind of try as hard as I can to separate the two a little bit and give myself that that balance. It also is mostly for Scott, because he is the most, he hates clutter, and our old house was, our dining room was completely filled with like PR things, all of my like content creating like equipment. It was, he was just so overwhelmed. So this has been nice to actually like give him a space that like he can be in another room far enough away from me that he doesn't hear me. We've never had that. We've always lived in confined spaces. I haven't worn my Apple Watch in forever, but he made me put it on and charge it yesterday so we could use walkie-talkies, because we've literally been yelling at each other from like upstairs to downstairs. But yeah, so it's it's nice. And it's just kind of a nice, I feel like I finally got my feet underneath me in terms of like my brand and who I am and what I want to accomplish. And I've grown so much in the last 2 years that I feel like this is kind of like a reset button to like, okay, you already know what you want. Like you've gotten your feet underneath you. Here's like, here's a place that you can like entertain and live your life, but also work and kind of separate the two. And we've never had a spare bedroom. Like I've never been able to offer my house to anybody to stay. So I feel like I should be able to do that now. Oh, but
congrats on the new spot.
Thank you. Thank you. It's awesome.
You'll always live in Nova Scotia?
Yeah. I don't want to go anywhere else. I mean, I get asked this question all the time, but I'm sure you know and feel the same way that I do, is that once you're here, like it's hard to go anywhere else. I want to travel. Yeah. I want to see all kinds of places, but my roots and my home is here. The people, the nightlife, like you can't beat any of it. Like you really can't beat any of it. And then my nephew's here, so I'm not going too far. I can't go too far. I love my sister too, but my nephew is, you know, I can't be too far away from him. I want to be there. That's the luxury of having this schedule and having the job that I have now, is the ability to always be there for everything. So if I move, I lose that luxury, especially with my family. So
it'd be hard to leave the ocean too.
Yeah.
Like living by the water.
It boggles my mind sometimes. Like when we were in Ontario, I just saw a big thing of water and I was like, oh, the ocean. And then I'm like, nope, they don't have that here. That's not like, they don't have that here. So yeah. And all of the places that we've thought about traveling, and I'm like, we should see mountains at some point. Like we should see land and not just ocean, but we love the ocean. Like we were just in California, and that was always a dream of ours, was to drive the coast of California. So that finally this year we went to Vegas and drove the coast, like from Vegas to California up top, and drove down the coast and got to stay on the beach in Malibu. And it was like, so, but unreal. Yeah, the ocean. And it doesn't feel as like far away from home because the ocean is there, but I couldn't leave.
What's your favorite part of California?
Malibu beach. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what I anticipated it to be in terms of like, it really wasn't expensive. Like where we stayed in an Airbnb right on the ocean, like could hear the waves crashing right underneath our bed at night. But I think Malibu was it, because that was kind of in my wedding letter to Scott, the bottom of the letter is like, I promise, like we'll get to California one day. Like we'll be on a beach in Malibu. So it was just like a full circle moment of like being on the beach in Malibu. So I think that was my favorite part, just because that was like the moment where we were just both like, oh shit.
Yeah, you
like,
check it off the bucket list.
Yeah. Well, I just don't, I think both of us had thought, and everything's happened so quickly. So it's like, almost still seems unbelievable that we were just there. Like, we haven't even caught up yet. Like, we had that moment. The moment was great, but like, we're still like every day being like, shit, like, were we in Malibu? Like, were we in California? So yeah, it was like a full circle moment. So that was definitely my favorite part, but we got to go, we were in Hollywood. We got to do like all the touristy things that you could possibly do when you were there. Yeah. And we were in Vegas and stayed at Caesar's Palace, like, which was so nice because the first time we were there, we had $500 in the bank account. Like, that was it. And I'm pretty sure I used that, and we had to like use our credit cards when we were up there. So it was one of those moments where it was nice to just like, we didn't have to worry about like where we were going to eat or what we were going to do. Like, there was no second thoughts this trip to Vegas, which was like, of again, another full circle moment for us. So yeah, it's exciting.
Vegas is pretty cool. It's an eye-opening place.
I love Vegas.
It's like, you know, no one's really walking around until like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They're all up till, you know, 6 in the morning.
I think when I first went to Vegas, like when we first went there, when we literally had nothing, it was like a bucket list trip. We were like, we're going to go to Vegas. We're going to be able to knock it off the list. We'll never want to go back. I thought it was just going to be a novelty trip. Yeah. We got there and walked into the casino with a mom gambling, smoking a cigarette, drinking and holding her baby in her thing. And I was like, where am I? And there's like no clocks anywhere. There was like, it just was this. And I'm a night owl. So like nightlife is my thing. And that's the Vegas, it does not stop. And it's so clean. Like, I try to explain that to people. I'm like, I would rather eat off the ground in Vegas than I would here in Halifax. Like, it's like pressure washed every single night. Like, it's so, but yeah, so we were so excited to go back because we didn't even book, we booked our hotels and then didn't plan a single thing for the whole time we were there because we were like, we'll just go with the flow, see what we can see. But yeah, it's incredible and I'll go back.
So what was your first breakthrough moment?
I guess it depends on what you consider a breakthrough moment. Obviously, the video that I did of Scott and I, like, talking about, it was a viral trend, and it was my boyfriend's 10 times hotter than me check. And I had seen all of these people doing the video, and they're conventionally beautiful people. Like, by beauty standards, these couples would be beautiful, beautiful couples. And the comment sections were just like tearing them apart, like trying to decide who's uglier. Like, and I'm like, this is so toxic. And I'm like, okay, do you want to see a couple who by beauty standards makes no sense? And I posted the video knowing exactly what I was doing. And I texted it to Scott and he was like, that nobody's going to watch that. And I'm like, nope, people are going to watch it. I was like, it's going to blow up. You mark my words, it's going to blow up. And I basically exploited him for my platform. And it was videos and photos of him in the background, like jacked, no shirt on at the beach. And then me being plus size and in the front. And essentially it, 1 day, 2 days went by, 3 days went by and nothing really happened. And then all of a sudden I was I was working part-time bartending, and my sister was texting me and she was like, oh my God, it's at 100,000 views. It's at 200,000 views. And then all of a sudden it just like skyrocketed. Wow. And I was like, oh no, like I'm just going to get, I wonder what the comment section looks like at this point. And I woke up with 56,000 followers a week later. And, I thought it was going to be a lot of really negative things and of short, yeah, they existed, but it actually ended up being a lot of women and people who are living in fat bodies being like, yeah, me and my partner aren't the same size either. Like here I am. Like we also do this, like this is normal. So that was definitely my breakthrough moment with realizing that my platform kind of had a niche, had people watching it. But realistically for me, my breakthrough moment in my life was when I lost my job with Good Life Fitness. Like that was probably my biggest turning point. It was like the worst thing that ever happened to me. I had worked for them for almost 8 years. They just walked in one day and was like, yeah, your club's closing. You're going with it. And I was like, cool, great. Like, you know, just 8 years of, it was awful. But it was the moment where I really realized that I had suppressed a lot of creativity through my entire life. And I'd spent the last 8 years working in not a corporate setting, but in a management position. And although I loved managing my team and I loved the people who I worked with, I didn't get to do anything creative. I wasn't creating at all whatsoever. So when I lost my job, I really put into perspective how much of myself I had really suppressed doing that position. And then on top of that, I would spend 14-hour days there, 13, 14-hour days at my job, missing out on tons of things with family and friends and people in my life that were very important. So that was the turning point where I decided that my job wasn't going to be the end all be all of my life, because I think I had put so much time into this job that I assumed that it would be my end all be all. Yeah. I just assumed it would always be there. I assumed that I had given so much time that they were never going to let me go. Like, I was just too valuable. And whether that's a conceited thing to say or something that I think comes along with being with a company for 8 years, like, you should be able to feel that way. It was a big eye opener that business is business. And yeah, although I understood the business decision, I was still a human being on the other side of that. And I literally had nothing. Like, I went 3 weeks and without any money coming in, essentially, when I lost my job. And I decided to go on unemployment and look for something like tangible. I was like, I don't want to rush into it. I don't want to get back into having the same responsibility I had, because look at where that got me, essentially. Yeah, yeah. And I got an iPad and an Apple Pencil, and I just started drawing. And that was kind of the moment that things opened up creatively. So mm-hmm. in terms of changing my view on what I wanted to do with my life, that moment was definitely my defining moment. But my defining moment with TikTok and, like, my actual career blowing up online, yep, was definitely that viral video specifically. That's
wicked. Yeah. And how many followers do you think you had before that viral video?
None, because it was my third video. Wow. So it was like maybe 500 followers, not wow. even.
And then 56,000.
Yeah, it was like a week of constant posting, but all the followers came off the back end of that video going viral. That was my first video to ever go viral. It's like almost my least viewed video now, which is hilarious. Yeah. But it's like it blew up at the right time, got to the right people, and just skyrocketed kind of what my platform would eventually become.
That's awesome. Yeah, yeah. I see some of your videos getting like 3-4 million, yeah, 5 million.
It's hit or miss. Like, we were talking about that earlier. It's one of those things that, like, there's no method to the TikTok madness. Like, there's no method to what you post. There's absolutely no method to it.
Yeah. TikTok's a hell of a platform. It's very cool.
It's cool because it pushes you to a lot of people. That's where it's an awareness app. Yeah. I don't, when I'm working with brands who are looking for like conversion and buy-in and engagement, Instagram's where you go. If you're looking for people to find out who you are off the end of a really cool trend that's going to get lots of views, TikTok is where it's at. So it's one of those things that's, it has really good things, but I don't make my money off of TikTok. So
Instagram?
Instagram's where I make my money. Instagram's like highest mm-hmm. engagement, your most conversion for sure comes off of, it's great. You can see lots of people on TikTok, but you're not going to guarantee that you're going to see the right people, because sometimes I have a video go viral on the right side of TikTok and sometimes I have it go viral on the wrong side of TikTok. Yeah. So there's no specific method, but definitely Instagram's where I see the most conversion. But then I can post a video on TikTok if it follows the trends or music and get really good awareness for a brand it.
And so, you're growing really fast on your Instagram. So are you using your TikTok following, kind of pushing them over to Instagram, or is that just natural?
Every once in a while I will. That's the other annoying thing about TikTok, is it suppresses any content where you talk about other social media platforms. So anytime you make a video where you talk about trying to push your audience over to Instagram,
they don't like that,
I get like 25,000 views on a video with a 4.4 million platform, which is like, means they're not pushing it to anybody, essentially. Yeah. They're not, which is, I get it. They don't want necessarily people leaving their platform, but so every so often I'll just like post a reminder that like, hey, I have other social media platforms, head on over. Yeah. I essentially use TikTok as a funnel to get people from mass groups of people from there to Instagram, and then that's the audience that I typically converse with the most, have the most conversation. People go to Instagram and TikTok for two different things. And like, most people don't realize that. And you don't even realize you do it yourself. If I want mindless scrolling and TikTok, I want something to laugh at, I'm on TikTok. If I want to read something that's going to motivate me and make me feel good or help me with my business or help me make a change in my life, I'm going to Instagram, because that's where the biggest captions can be. That's where typically the bigger creators are having that impact and actually putting a lot of time, not to say there's not a lot of time that goes into TikTok, there's plenty, but when you factor in actual like educational pieces and stuff, and the time I have to put into my posts for like captions and stuff, more time gets spent on TikTok or Instagram for sure.
Yeah, it's funny. I want to rewind back to like when you said that your job was kind of canceled that day. Classified said the same thing. His biggest breakthrough moment was when he got laid off Manulife when he was working there, and he didn't really make music until that moment. And then he started making music every day because he had no other option. He didn't have a safe job to go back to. So was that your last job, or was there any other jobs after
that? So I lost the job with Good Life, and then I took 10 months off, and then I was like, okay, I need to supplement. And it happened all at the same time. I got the job working with Cintas doing accounts receivable, and it was so funny. I walked into my interview, the lady is like, you're coming from being like a general manager of a fitness facility, you want to do accounts receivable. I was like, I want to walk in at 9, I want to leave at 4, and I want nobody to talk to me afterwards. Like, yeah. I don't want overtime. I don't want to be held back after my shift. I just was so done. I was like, I don't want to manage people. I don't want to talk to anybody. Like, I made friends and people were great there, but I just was so tired of the responsibility that I had had there after putting in all that time and then literally reaping absolutely no benefits from it. And then this was, I had found during that 10 months so much joy in spending time with my friends and my family, spending time creating, drawing, that I was like, I'm not willing to do a job that's going to hold me back from any of those things ever again. So I started that job and it was great. And I met some really great friends with them, but then my platform started to blow up. And 10 months later, I was kind of at a crossroad because I was a foot in for this poor business and a foot into my content creating. Yeah. And I was distracted while I was at work, but I was just not doing content creating because I was at work. So it was like this half in, half out. And that's scary. Like going from, I lost my job and turned 30 unemployed. And like, that was terrifying. But then to be a year later, have a job, but now have an opportunity to quit that job was like, but do you, like, what do you do? Like, how do you, how do you hope that you're going to be able to? And I knew nothing about it when it came to making money or what that even, how consistent it would be or how much, you know, would be there for me. Stability wise, you know, Cintas just offered me stability, but it wasn't fair to either of them. Like, it wasn't fair to my content creating and it wasn't fair to the company. So I chose to quit, and my last day was Halloween. So I gave them a 2 weeks notice and worked my 2 weeks out and got to leave on that last day. And it was like the most scary, probably more scary, honestly more scary than losing my job with Good Life Fitness, in the sense that it was my decision. So that was like the terrifying part, I guess, for me. But before this, Scott and I had kind of worked out that if I could make my salary doing content creating, that I could quit my job. So like that was kind of our, if I could bank that money and then I could quit that job and then I would have that money, because that's all I was going to make for the rest of the year anyways, essentially. So that's, bless Scott, he's my financial advisor. He's also the one who like does the most saving. And so it only took me 2.5 months of working with, and it wasn't, my salary with Cintas was $31,000. It wasn't like this crazy salary, but I was like, okay, I'll make it. And I think in Scott's head, he was like, oh, this will take like 6 months, 7 months, maybe a year for you to make it. And then we'll, not 3 months, 2.5 months later, I was like, so I made my salary. He was like, what? And I was like,
proud.
I was like, yeah, awesome. It was like a really cool moment to be, and it made so much sense too, to do it that way, because I was like, I'll still have stability and be able to, but it took off after that. And when I was able to step away from the job and actually fully focus on what I was doing, content creating, it allowed me to be far more pinpointed with my content. And I set my pillars for what my platform were going to be. And I just kind of ran with it. And I was able to give everything that I could to that. And that helped me tenfold with actually focusing on it. But it's awesome. Not easy. It's scary. Like, it was so scary.
I bet. What did your friends and family think?
I told my parents at their anniversary dinner that I was quitting my job. And my dad was like, well, maybe you should keep it. And I was like, I don't think, like, I think I think I'm too old now. Like, I can get a shitty job anytime. Like, in my brain, I'm like, if I want to go back to another, you know, job, I'll find something. I'm a hard worker. Just one thing I know, like, I'm not going to go without paying my bills. I'll find a way to do it. I was like, you taught me how to be a hard worker. And like, now I want to try this and do it. And he actually told me when I was 17 years old and I quit my job at Tim Hortons, my dad said to me, you'll never have a lot of opportunities in your life to quit a job. And when they present themselves, there's probably a reason, because most people don't have the luxury of giving up opportunities or quitting jobs. And so he told me that back when I was 17 and I had the luxury of quitting the job. They were mistreating me when I, at the specific location, I love Tim Hortons, but the specific location, and I was only a kid and I had too much going on and I was in university. So I quit that job, and that's what my dad said to me. So we were sitting at the dinner table and he says, well, maybe you should keep it. And I was like, you actually told me when I was 17 that I would not get lots of opportunities to quit jobs, and I have the opportunity to do it, so I'm going to take it. My mom was like, you didn't say that.
That's great advice.
Yeah. So, and it was good advice, because I think at the time, two different reasons, like quitting my job when I was 17 was different than quitting my job now. But it's true. Like, if you have that option, there's probably a reason. Like, you have that option, and whether that's like self-motivated or support from family or friends or et cetera, like whatever that is, there's probably a reason why you're thinking about quitting. And having enough confidence to say that I can do that was definitely like terrifying, but also, what if I didn't? Like, I had just turned 30 and I was like, what if I don't? What if I never know if this could go somewhere? What if I never know if I could have an impact on other people? Like, what if I never know what my purpose actually really is? Yep. Scary, but
that's awesome.
Obviously,
but you took that leap of faith.
Obviously crazy,
so,
but
it worked out very well.
Everybody was supportive of me though. Like, I mean, obviously Scott specifically has never backed away from anything I've ever opened my mouth to say, oh, I'm going to try this. And he's like, cool. Or he'll be like, all right. Okay. But like, what does this look like? He's never actually ever given me any pushback on everything and anything. And I'm so lucky that he's so supportive.
Awesome.
And then my brother and my sister, I think my family knew how hard I worked anyways, and that I've never needed much from anybody ever. So I think my friends and family knew that when I said that I was going to quit my job, that it was like, I already had a plan and I kind of knew what I was going to do. In the back of everybody's minds, just like mine, when anybody quits their job to become a content creator, an influencer, it's like, oh, how long is this going to last? And it's like,
you got a lot of haters.
I thought all of those same things about myself too. Like, I was still skeptical, but I was not willing to not at least risk it. Like, what? And I mean, like I said, I was already working a job that I didn't necessarily see a future with, that I wasn't necessarily fulfilled with, but I was so fulfilled outside of my job that I could go find that whenever I wanted in my brain. So it's like, what if I could have a job that I was fulfilled with in my job and in my life? And like, that was kind of my motivator to find the two, because I've never had that. I've never had a job feel fulfilling and had a fulfilling outside life. It was always one or the other. And then now here I am with one that allows me to have literally both.
I think that's great advice. Everyone listening that's kind of debating that leap of faith to do whatever they want to do creatively with not a lot of, you know, income for sure coming in right away. So that's an awesome thing for you to say. And it's very, very true. And I think that a lot of people need to hear that. So what did your day-to-day schedule change to be like once you quit that job and go full-time content creation?
I still have absolutely no idea what my day-to-day schedule is. I think that that's the beauty of content creating in general, is that I get to kind of make it on a regular basis. I do most of my creating in the evenings. Like, my brain really doesn't get going until afternoon, evening, whereas most people like an early start. That's just not me. Like, I'd rather sleep in until 12 o'clock and then, you know, figure out. So that's been kind of nice, is that I've been able to, instead of running myself into the ground, trying to get up early in the morning and create a regular scheduled day, I'm able to kind of take advantage of the fact that like my brain works better at night. Yep. So everybody's different. And I think being able to like actually use that to my advantage has been so helpful. Like, I mean it when I say I write down majority of my thoughts in the evening. When most people are going to bed, I'm up at like 1 o'clock in the morning, content creating, writing things down. And if I was asleep, I wouldn't have those same thoughts. It just takes me that long to get there. I also will just like lay in bed and be like, okay, that would be a good idea. This would be a good idea. So I spend a lot of time doing it that way. So my schedule is wonky compared to a traditional 9-to-5. So it's kind of funny to go from one to directly to the opposite. But I content, a lot of my day is spent online. A lot of my day is spent online interacting with followers, my DMs, comment sections of other creators' videos. I suck at that. I so suck at that. I went from being so great at being present on other people's social media to then having my own and not being present on anybody. So I'm working on it, but I try really hard to be present no matter where I am online. And then ideas. So I usually spend probably an hour a day trying to think of new ideas or searching through. Like, I don't mindlessly scroll on TikTok anymore. I don't use TikTok for entertainment. TikTok essentially is like research and my business now. Yeah. So anytime I'm scrolling on TikTok, I'm typically looking for like trending sounds, trending creators, music, ideas, et cetera. From that, because I mean, you can post the way TikTok works, you can post something with a trending sound and it just automatically gets views. Like you don't even have like, there's, yeah, it's just, it's outrageous how it works some months and then doesn't work other months. So there's no, But yeah, so most of my time spent on TikTok is just research on how to work with the brands that I'm working with and the trends that are on there to create content that's going to get views, essentially. Instagram, I do a lot of mindless scrolling on. Yeah, like that too. Would be like, but I also consume a lot on there. I just find what I consume on there is a little bit more impactful than what I consume on TikTok. But yeah, half my day is social media for sure. Just being present, reading, researching. And then the other half of my day would be spent content creating through TikTok, Instagram, or just filming my life. Because that's the other beauty part about our content is that I can just videotape us interacting and people are excited to see that, which 100%. Is super fun and a luxury that not every creator has. So I try to take advantage of that, but I don't wake up in the morning and say, I got to do this. Sorry, I have to do that. I just kind of, I wing it and my managers put things in my calendars and I get those done. But other than that, I am a chaotic human being that thrives on being a procrastinator. Yep. So I work with that. Yeah.
I'm a night owl as well. A lot of my ideas come at night too when I'm laying in bed. I call it monkey brain because you're just laying there and you got all these ideas. So you start writing them down.
I suppressed that for so long. I think there's a lot of creative people out there that suppress their creative brain, one, by what they're doing on their everyday life, but two, because we're taught to essentially succumb to this 9-to-5 idea of up early, doing all of these structured things. And some people's brains just don't work that way. And my brain does not work that way. So if I can take advantage of the other night, Scott and I were up for almost 24 hours because I was creating, we were up, we were spending time together, and then we're just dead to the world for a solid 8 hours. But we got so much done essentially in that time period that I was like, well, I can't go to sleep now. Like now my brain's working. Now I have other things I need to get done. So, I mean, that's another piece of advice for people, especially for content creating, is figure out where your brain works best and live your life around that. Because I get so much more done than I ever actually did. And there's nothing, I got so much scrutiny when people would be like, well, when do you sleep? What time do you get up in the morning? And I'd be like, lunchtime. And they're like, ugh. And we attribute like people getting up at lunch to laziness. Like people in their brains are thinking, oh, you don't get up till lunchtime. And it's like, well, no. When you're in bed at 1 a.m. asleep, I'm up till 4. Yeah, so like lunchtime to me, it's a regular sleep schedule. Yeah. It's just not what we're brainwashed to feel 100%. Can be a productive schedule. Yeah. So yeah, mine's very untraditional, but it is working really well for me.
It's almost like you're running on West Coast time.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing too about content creating is that I am working with people or brands on the West Coast. So like I have friends that are on the West Coast. So like 1 a.m. for me is like 10 p.m. for them.
Yeah. Or 4 hours. So yeah, it's
10, I'm really 11, 12. 9 o'clock, yeah. Yeah. So like, So math, not me. Yeah. So somewhere around that.
I think we got
it's earlier. That's all. So yeah, so like in order for me to spend time with some of my friends that are ending their days at like 8 p.m., I have to be up until 1 a.m. So it's like you don't, it's one of those things that you don't really understand until you have to do that. And like my life now is all over the world, which is so cool. And I have friends and creators that I interact with all over the world. So having the luxury to be able to send a text message at 2 o'clock in the morning is just nice. Like it's just nice. And I have that ability. So I mean, I'm doing a conference on Wednesday and I'm speaking at 9 p.m. It's like, but that for some people is like unheard of. It's like, well, no, because 9 p.m. here is different than, you know, out west. So, yeah, so it's all over the place. But luckily for me, I've just been able to kind of go with the flow, and I procrastinate so well that even if they even if things get overwhelming, I'm pretty good at getting it done.
That's just awesome. Nice. But and your following is very U.S., isn't it?
Like more. Yeah, it's like 64%. It's pretty even on both TikTok and Instagram because they pretty much mirror one another. But yeah, 64% US followers. But I think that this has to do with the fact that US, like the US was on TikTok before a lot of Canadians were actually on TikTok. Like it was dominated by and is dominated by Americans. So it made sense that my stuff would just go there.
Cool.
And I, you know, but yeah. So, and also it depends on when you post your content too. Like when you're posting your content at like 1 a.m., typically I get a lot of West Coast people who are seeing my content earlier because they're still awake and my East Coast people are asleep. So they don't see it till the morning. So sometimes it'll get pushed out to a different, completely different time zone because of when I'm creating on the East Coast. So that's another thing that I've noticed a lot too, but yeah.
Do you find there's a post time like that you'd recommend or is it always different? Because
I mean, you can follow those things. But like, I'm not going to lie to anybody on here. I had no idea what I was doing when I started. I still have no idea some days. And like, that's the beauty of content creating in general is that the business changes, what the needs change, your audience changes. The algorithms are set to change because if everybody was on the same algorithm all of the time, everybody would be able to have a platform essentially. And, you know, it's one of those things that I create when I create it and I put it out there. And that's just kind of how I do it. Some weeks like TikTok, I haven't posted on TikTok in like 5 days, which would be like unheard of because people are like, oh no, you have to post on TikTok. And it's like, well, no, I don't, because sometimes I'll put out 7 videos on TikTok and they'll go nowhere. But then I can put out 1 random video of my life and it goes absolutely viral. I'm like, I literally put no effort into that. Why is 14 million people seeing this? So I try not to put too much pressure on my actual scheduling of posting because I think if I do that, I know myself well enough to know that if I do that, it's going to feel like more of a chore than it actually is going to feel like content creation. So that's been something I've tried really hard to stick to is that I only schedule out the content that I'm posting for brands. The rest of my content comes organically with the way my life is. I was sick. I was moving. There wasn't a lot of content. That's normal. Like 100%. If you're sick and you're moving, you're not as productive at work. Like you can't tell me any, you can't tell me any different. Everyone no matter what rest. Job you're doing, you're not as productive at work. So I allow myself that time, but I don't structure it. So if you're out there and you're like trying to figure out times, it's cool. You can look at stats and stuff and like your Instagram tells you when your highest view times are, but people who want to view it and want to be engaged are going to come for it. And that's just the truth. So
I like that. What was one of your early obstacles that you had to overcome besides the job stuff? Like, is there another one that kind of stands out to you?
Like before content creating or with content creating?
I'd say maybe during content creating, like once everything started to pop off for you, like what was one of your,
I'm a people pleaser. I like that people like me and I struggle when people don't. So that has been a big learning curve of like how to set those boundaries online and just be like, one, I'm sharing my life with you and people think that they're entitled to that and you're not. It's a privilege. Like it's a privilege and understanding that people on my platform aren't entitled to their own opinions on my life and aren't entitled to tell me how they feel about the decisions that I make and really starting treating it like it's a privilege that I'm sharing my life was probably the biggest change because I wanted to make everybody happy. struggle that I can't help everybody. And like, that was a big learning curve at the beginning, is like, I'd be always sharing GoFundMes, or I would always be sharing all of these posts. And it's just like, it's a rabbit hole. And it's really sad when you realize that no matter how much money you have, no matter how big your platform is, you're never going to be able to help enough people. And I think I was so blind to that when I started the platform that it hit me like a brick wall when I finally had to be like, hey, you can't send me every GoFundMe. Yeah. I can't post them all. Like, I can't do that. Yeah. I can't. And that hurt a lot, to have to be like, you care about me, you're here, you're on my platform, but I can't help everybody. Like, I literally can't. I don't have the means to do that. And I think a lot of people forget that with when you have a platform, is that if the reason why my platform is successful is because I have five pillars that I stick to, and I stick to those five pillars no matter what I post. Do I throw in things here and there that are from those pillars, like what I did for Starbucks, or like when I, you know, got donations and made a big tip to the team, or when I do something for families around Christmas? Sure, I toss those in here and there, but people stick to my platform because of the pillars that I have on there. None of those pillars are activism. None of those pillars right now are giving, because I don't have enough or a big enough platform to be able to like create my own. Well, I do, and I will eventually, but I'd like to have my own charity that can give back. Nice. But you just don't have that yet. So, and people forget that if I start diluting my pillars with other things, asking my followers for things all the time, or putting all of these activist things onto my platforms, I lose my platform. For people leave. Yeah. And so it's a fine line between being there for people and showing my support, but also maintaining my platform. Because if I become an activist for literally everything in the world, then my platform becomes about activism and I lose every follower that I have there. Yeah. So I'd rather, this was definitely my biggest, I'd rather show support on one specific thing every once in a while and get a huge group of my followers come over to support it, than to be supporting all of these little things. Because I also have to realize that like my followers are regular human beings. They can't be donating to things every single day. Like there's, I have tons of followers who are struggling and going through things. So yeah, realizing that I had to set boundaries and that I literally cannot help everybody is hard. And I still deal with that. Like I'll still get the odd message from people being like, you're not doing enough. And I'm not doing enough. Nobody's doing enough.
For sure.
Literally not another human being on this planet is doing enough. So it's like to realize that you'll never
please everyone.
Yeah. And it's the pleasing part is one thing, because I'm pretty good at being like, okay, well, fuck you. Like if you don't like me, that's on you. I'm a great person. But the helping part of that, I think, is what hurt me the most, is because like you want to, any good human being wants to help people, but you get asked all the time. And I know that you would experience this from a business, how many letters for like supporting like all different like fundraisers, et cetera. Oh, yeah. And if you, it's not that you can't, it's that if you do, it loses its allure and you lose your platform specifically for creators. And then I don't get enough support for people who are asking for support that I do want to help. And then I don't have followers to even make a difference. So it's like this teeter totter between the two. But yeah, I do my best to like support financially where I can, but just realizing that I'm not going to be able to help everybody.
100%.
Like if Oprah couldn't help everybody, I can't help everybody. Like, true. Yeah. But that's a hard thing to like come to amends with, especially as a, like a, I'm an empath. So like, it doesn't really matter what you tell me, I'm going to feel for you no matter what you're going through. So just coming to that realization that like in my head, I was like, oh, I can help people now. And it's like, yeah, you still can't help everybody. Like good luck, but you can't help everybody. So
I like the pillars thing you said a lot. And I think it's important for any brand, any business, any individual to have those pillars, because if you get diluted, just like you said, you lose, you know, day by day followers and people that like your business and everything. So when did you first identify your pillars?
When the first video went viral, like the one about Scott and I, well, about Scott, I decided then that I was going to kind of keep my content like in the realm of like our relationship, humor. People laughed at that. It was funny. And then as we kind of went, I was like, okay, well, I'm not, there's tons of people who are just doing their relationship in humor. Like I have, like there's more, there needs to be more. It needs to be more dynamic than just that. So I increased my pillars. So my pillars are our relationship, humor, moving my body, self-love and authenticity. So those are my five pillars. And then I navigate the world of content creating with my pillars. So if a creator reaches out and they want to work with me, like, what pillar do they fall underneath? If a brand reaches out and wants to work with me, well, what pillars do they fall underneath? And if they don't fall underneath any of those pillars, yeah, it's not a brand that I would necessarily want to work with. Or it's like, then I'm like, okay, well, how can I make my pillars one of their business's pillars? Like, and I think that that's also like another part is like, I work with Lululemon, which has been a little bit of, I've received a little bit of pushback on it because Lululemon's not an inclusive brand. And as a fat creator, people just assume that fat creators work with inclusive brands. And like, that's not the case. Like, I don't have to work with just all inclusive brands just because I'm fat. Like, I get to choose who I work with. But movement's a pillar of mine, and I talk about like self-love, but I've also been able to like insert myself into the Lulu business and help give them feedback to increase their sizing and change some things that they've been doing and like make a difference in that sense. So, yeah, it's kind of like my Bible, like my compass, I guess, like is that. A better way. It's my compass with how I make decisions and who I work with, the brands I work with, the content that I choose to put out there. Cause I feel like if I veer from that, it's just too much.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And you must have to say a lot no to a lot of brand deals, eh?
Yes, like I know people think that we just say yes to everything. Like, yeah. I think that's a big misconception in the content creation world is that content creators say yes to everything that comes their way. I'm lucky. I have a management team and my Shine team is incredible, but my managers know what I'm all about. I don't even get half of what they're even offered for me. That doesn't even see me. Like, they're like, absolutely not. Yeah. Not something you're interested in. If it's something that they're on the fence about, they'll send it to me and ask me my opinion. And if it's not, they won't even see it. And then even then I can make a no. I think a lot of people think that you're just entitled, like, or everybody says yes, but I say no, to a lot more now than I do actually say yes to. And like, that's the way I would like it to be. Like, 100%. Especially working with authenticity as one of my pillars, like, I need to try things before I talk to my followers about them. And there's tons of brands that are like, here, this cream, talk about it in 2 days and post about it. And I'm like, no.
I haven't had a good trial.
If you literally know anything about me, I'm not interested in your scale. I'm not interested in your face cream that I'm going to wear for 2 days and then talk to people about it. Most brands, it's specific, at least 2 weeks for some progress. For skincare, like, I'd prefer a month. Like, I'm not going to give you shitty things. Like, that devalues my word, first of all, like, how, as a creator, and it devalues your brand. So 100%, yeah. If I'm not being truthful about your product and then people use your product, well, it's going to come out eventually. So it's not like you can hide that. So I do say no a lot. And that's just personal preference on, again, those five pillars and on what a level of work I want to do. Cause sometimes there's a lot more work for a lot less money. And I'm at this point, I'm trying to work smarter, not harder. Like, that's the whole luxury of having this schedule in this business is that I get to work with brands who like make me feel joy when I'm creating for them, or I know will be an asset to my followers. So I do get to be picky, which is a nice luxury to have. At first I was scared about that because I thought that if I was short for money, like it's a lot of creators dread it, like being in a position to like not have money and have to say yes, because that's the scary part about content creating is that it's not consistent. And I'm lucky that I did it the way that I did it. So for content creators out there who are looking for advice, definitely save up money before you actually step in to do it full time, because then you never feel the pressure of having to say yes to a brand that doesn't bring you joy or won't bring your followers joy or goes against your pillars or your morals. Like, I think that a lot of creators get into those positions because they jump in not too early, but they jump in without an understanding of what a grind it's going to be and then are forced to say yes to things that are going to bring them money because they need it, but aren't necessarily the right fit for their brand, which can just create a big gap between the creator and their followers.
Yeah. That's like a short-term solution, but you're in it for the long haul.
Yeah, for sure. You have to be, right? Yeah. Every decision you make from your business has to be about the long haul. It can't be a simple, quick gain movement. It has to be for the long haul of the business, because any short movement that you make that short term can also have really long term effects when it 100%. Comes to what you do and what you're hoping to build. So 100%. People remember. So oh, you yeah. have
they
to keep
that.
No, they don't.
So what are three brands that you've worked with so far that you really had fun working with?
Pennington's was the coolest because Pennington's, I mean, as a fat woman, like going shopping, going to stores, like Pennington's was the store my mom took me to where I could feel like I had clothing that like made me look cool and not like an old grandma, because typically for anybody who's plus size and in the plus size community, our clothing choices suck. Pennington's was the first time that I got to have that, as and my mom took me there. So when they reached out for me to be a part of their Freedom to Be Me campaign, it was like a dream come true. That's because awesome, yeah. Pennington's was definitely the moment where I felt free to like dress the way I wanted to dress, to instead of hiding my body and putting it out there. So they flew me and my mom to Montreal, and I got to be a part of that video campaign, and it aligned so perfectly with like my messaging about just like living your life, being who you are, not hiding in the shadows, like finding out who you are to the core and not just living around your body. So their messaging was amazing. That was definitely like will and forever be a highlight of my career, because I got to meet some really cool executives in the Pennington's team, and dominated by women. The film crew that we worked with in Montreal was run by women, which was so neat too, just to be in that atmosphere. So that was awesome. I working with Sierra Nutrition, and it's a supplement company, but long story short, my history with supplements is not great. I did bodybuilding. I did a bikini competition. I neglected my nutrition and did a lot of really shitty things in the fitness world. So I really rekindled my relationship with supplements and food and my body and like working out and taking things for the right reasons. Yeah. And long story short, one of the leaders on the Sierra Nutrition team worked for Good Life Fitness, and we had a past relationship, and she's one of the coolest people. They're based out of Newfoundland, so again, even cooler. And she's been awesome, but I get the most creativity and freedom with Sierra Nutrition. Like that's nice. Why I think I like working with them so much. Is that I get to sell their products, but only the ones that I use. Like that's the other cool part about the brand, is like they have tons of these different products, but they're not interested in me pushing anything I'm not actually using or don't believe works for my followers, which I think is so important and I have so much respect for. And then Lululemon, I think, was like a dream come true, because and I think that that's the one where I feel like I've had the most amount of impact, I guess, with like feedback and just building the bridge between the plus size community and the brand, because even though they're not fully inclusive, they do have sizing up to size 20 now. And I mean, I was a 16-year-old kid shoving myself into size 12s there. And just when I did my first post for them, they allowed me to call them out in my caption, just to be like, I've been showing up for Lululemon since I was 14 years old. Like my first scuba hoodie that I, you know, zipped my body into, to the size 12s that I've put on my fat body for so many years, just like wearing them because they were my favorite yoga pants. Like I got to call them out and say like, it's a bit late, but like they're showing up for me now. And they were so gracious about that. And I think that that's the one where I definitely had the most impact. So yeah, I'd say that those are my three, all for different reasons, but definitely the three that I think have kind of help me navigate how I want to work with other brands too, like what to expect in terms of like messages that make me feel good, freedom to create what I want, but then also to have an opinion and make an impact if I need to.
That's awesome. Who do you want to work with next?
Jeep. Nice, that would be very cool.
Hopefully you're listening to
me. I say Jeep just because Jeep was my dream car for so long, and I was able to make that happen for myself this last year, which happened very quickly. But traveling and going on adventures is something that's like near and dear to Scott and I's heart. So that would be a cool one, because I think that we could definitely make some really cool content traveling Canada 100%. And seeing some really cool things.
100%.
Converse is another one. Yeah. I wear Converse to exercise. I just love Converse as a whole. Like my closet is full of them. I just think it would be a cool brand to either create a pair or just work with in general. And I'd like to do more. I'd like to work with some more not-for-profits. So this year, one of my favorite campaigns that I did was with McDonald's for the Ronald McDonald House, and I got to give back this year with them specifically. So more of that type of work, cool. I think is important, because it's great to get to create content that drives people in to support and make a difference too. So
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you'd be a great fit for Jeep. Like,
I think I would be too.
We've been working with them for, this is our second year, and it's been fun. They're very open to creative freedom. That's one of my main pillars as well, being able to, like, you know, choose what we want to do, when we want to do it, and kind of how we want to do it in within their guidelines and everything. And they're always like, yep, like, just go to Cape Breton, and we trust you're going to, you know, show enough Jeep and show the right features and do stuff. But you'd be an awesome fit for a Jeep.
Well, and I think too, like, I haven't even tapped into what my Jeep is capable of yet. Like, I haven't taken the top off of it yet. My doors come off, like, everything comes up, but we had never had a garage.
Right.
So taking that off in Nova Scotia sucks sometimes, because if it rains, you're screwed.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're rushing out to try to get everything back on. But now I have a garage in my new house.
There you go.
My Jeep has been sitting pretty in the garage, protected. Nice. But yeah, so I'm excited this summer to actually, like, take the top and the doors off and, like, drive it downtown Halifax.
It's a lot of fun.
Like, so that definitely would be one I'd be interested in.
You got to go to Crescent Beach down in, like, near Bridgewater. You can drive on the beach and just sort of do donuts and rip around.
It's everywhere. Crazy, because that was, like, the first I'd always wanted a Jeep, not for Jeep reasons, but because of Clueless. Cher had a white Jeep that was, like, she was, like, the girliest human being, but then she drove a white Jeep, and I just think that there's so much. I think Jeeps are so powerful. I think that's why I like them so much, is, like, I feel like a badass when I'm in my Jeep. Like, I'm higher than everybody, I'm bigger than everybody in my Jeep. People always look at Jeeps, and, like, the Jeep is, like, a whole other exciting part to it that I, like, I didn't even know it was a thing. And then I'm, like, driving, and people are waving at me, and I'm like, but I'm me, so I have a platform, so I'm like, do people know who I am? And then I remember the guy who Michael, who sold me my Jeep, was like, no, it's like a Jeep wave, like, you have to wave to everybody who has a Jeep. And my dad used to drive a motorcycle, and that was a thing on motorcycles, is you would wave to people on the motorcycles. I was like, oh my god, I'm so much cooler now. I think they're just so powerful. But we were at Crescent Beach, and that was the first time that we had seen that. One, it was a lot of trucks, but then we got down to the end of the beach, and every Jeep that probably is in Nova Scotia was there for, like, this some type of rally that they were doing, and just, like, seeing all of those. So mine's just, like, plain so far, but, like, all of them, like, lifted with all of, like, so cool.
Yeah, we love Jeeps here at East Coast, and honestly, it's hard to beat a Jeep on a summer day with the roof off and the doors off.
Well, we did the Cabot Trail in the Jeep last summer.
Nice.
And, like, that in itself was cool, but we drove up this, we were in Shetty Camp, and we drove up the side of the mountain, and, like, typically you would walk it. But I'm like, I have a Jeep. So I was like, no, this is terrifying. I was like, no way. Like, drove it all the way up to the top. And I was like, you weren't going to let me come up here. And I was like, look how cool my Jeep is. We can get up here. So we have pictures of us up at the top. But yeah, so I didn't do anything too crazy, because I did not want to flip my Jeep. I was terrified that was going to happen. But as time goes and I learn more about it, it would be cool. But it was just neat to go all the way up to the top of literally the mountain in my Jeep. Like, these little cars, like, you're driving past them, like, stopped halfway up. And then here I was up all at the top of my bright white Jeep with the top down.
It's sick. pretty fun lifestyle, the whole Jeep life.
It's like, I don't know what I expected it, but it's better than I expected it to ever be. Like, I drove it home the first day, you literally feel everything in a Jeep. I've driven Civics, which feel absolutely nothing. So the potholes in Nova Scotia, or Halifax specifically, were very evident my first drive home in my Jeep. Scott was like, I feel like we're off-roading, but we're in the middle of the city. I was like, yeah, it's not a smooth ride, okay? It's not a sports car. It's meant for this. But it's been awesome.
So what's it like being such a huge creator on TikTok? And, like, how does that whole thing work with the creator side of it? Is it paid per view once you hit a certain amount of views, or how does that all work?
So interesting enough, creators on TikTok from Canada get paid nothing.
Really?
So I make $0 off of any of my content on TikTok. American creators have the creator fund, which allows them to get paid per view. It's still nothing dramatic until you're a creator that has, like, you know, 10 million followers or even probably like a creator who has like 20 million followers, then you're making a pretty good amount from the creator fund. But for me, like I don't make any of my money off of that. Any money that comes from TikTok comes from direct donations from followers if I'm live. And I try really hard not to. I mean, I don't need my followers to pay me at this point. Like at the beginning, going live was like how I made my money to like be able to support my content creation. So, and I'm so grateful for that. I bought my very first MacBook Pro to edit like my YouTube and my videos on, based off of just one single live, like with donations that people sent me. So I'm super grateful for that. So I try really hard not to go live. I don't want to take from my followers unless like it's one for somebody else or two, I need to, and I needed to at the beginning and I don't really need to anymore. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I make nothing from them specifically, TikTok itself. Being a large creator online is outrageous because it comes with like this pedestal that just no one really actually ever deserves. So it's one of those things that like people just put me on a pedestal as being like, I don't know, not a human being, like that's literally just living their lives. So like that's kind of the hard part about having a huge platform is just like people forget that I'm just a 32-year-old woman. Like I have siblings in my own family. I have my own problems. I have my own things that I'm going through on a regular day, like a regular basis. So that's kind of the hard part about having a platform in general. But for me to, I guess for the money side of things, so like to kind of explain how that works is that I work with a management team who essentially sources and is sourced by brands that then would negotiate like terms of contract for me to post about a product or with a product or however that looks like for the brand itself. And it's not necessarily like pay per view specifically. It would be like my follower count based off of like my insights, etc. Yep. Off of that. But again, I make just as much money off of my Instagram with 600,000 followers as I do on my TikTok with 4.4 million because typically my most engaged audience is my Instagram audience, and more so awareness happens on the TikTok platform. So it's a funny thing to like work with brands because sometimes they're like, we need a TikTok. And I'm like, but that's not going to get you what you want. Like, I understand that you want the TikTok because I have lots of followers, but I can't guarantee that X amount of people are going to see my video on TikTok. Like even though I have 4.4 million followers, I can post an ad on TikTok and it's easier to swipe past it on TikTok. It's a less engaged audience. So if people see my ad, they're like, oh, I know if I swipe twice, I'm going to get to one of her funny videos. And then they can just skip over it. Whereas on my Instagram, I've built this following of engaged followers and people who really want to see me succeed, which is incredible, who will sit there and watch the ad content because they know how beneficial that is to me and my business and working with other brands. So it's a funny thing to navigate with brands specifically, but also a lot of people jumping into the creator space of like, yeah, you need to invest time in TikTok, but that's not where you're going to make your money as a Canadian. Yeah. Like you have to really work really hard to build your platform on TikTok and then start filtering things over to Instagram.
What's your favorite social media app?
I guess it depends on the day. But my heart lies with TikTok because that's what skyrocketed my business for sure. But my impact happens on Instagram. So I have to say typically the two of them for two different reasons. But I enjoy TikTok because of the opportunity it has given so many people to create and be seen. And it has a lot of crappy things that with a lot of people comes a lot of shitty people. But at the same time, it's given a lot of opportunity for businesses to be seen and creators to be seen and me to think that I'm funny. Like that was like the other thing. Like I didn't know I was a funny person until I had TikTok. And like, that's just opened a new door for me of being able to create and find my audience and find my people on an online platform. And I think that's going to be really cool to watch as the world opens up, how many female comedians start to come out and start to create more and get on a stage that's typically dominated by men, which I think is really neat. So a TikTok because it's given me that freedom, but my impact definitely happens on Instagram. Like that's where I get to be more deep and not just surface level.
Awesome. Yeah. You get a ton of love and support, but there's always the assholes. Yeah. So how do you deal with the haters?
I mean, I am trying really hard to to break down this idea that it comes with the territory, because sometimes things will happen and people will be like, oh, well, that's what you ask for. And it's like, no, like not a single person asks to be bullied. It doesn't matter what job you do in this entire world. You shouldn't expect to walk to work and be belittled by human beings on the internet. Like you shouldn't. So I have a system I call my three E's. It sounds funny, but it really helps me because again, people pleaser, an empath, I like to be liked, but it's hard sometimes. Like it's one of those things that I've had to like be like, one, not everybody's gonna like you, but having a system allows me to kind of navigate it from a business standpoint rather than a personal standpoint, I guess. Yep. So I typically will spend most of my time erasing comments that play no value. So if I'm erasing, I'm erasing Brandon, who's 13 at home, putting a pig emoji on my video. Like that's what I'm erasing. Like I don't, that doesn't need to be there. That's just like a useless comment. Someone else who is fat might see that and be hurt by it. It doesn't bother me, but I just don't want that on my platform. I'll educate. Typically that happens if I see value in it. Like I don't necessarily see value in educating the 13-year-old Brandon who thinks he's funny. But when a 40-year-old father or a 40-year-old person gets on my videos and makes comments about my weight or being fat or tries to spew misinformation about the fat community in general or me as a human being or my husband or just in general is trying to push something that they think they're educated on that they're not, I'll spend the time to try to educate. So whether that's like a quick comment back to be like, you're wrong, here's why, or another video to be like, okay, we're gonna shed some light on this, let's have a conversation around it, I'll try to educate. And then if education and erasing doesn't work, I eradicate from my space. So I get rid of them completely. So I'll delete their comment, I'll block them on both of my social media platforms. Don't think for a second if you get blocked on one, you're not blocked on the other. You 100%. Are like, you're not, you're not privy to my time if you're gonna waste it. So yeah, so my three E's have been kind of, I try to spend most of my time educating because I think that the hard part about being, for me, being a fat creator is that a lot of people, everybody experiences fat phobia, fat people included. It's why a lot of fat people want to be thin, is because of the fat phobia that's ingrained in us. It's things that we learned. I don't necessarily agree with holding that against people. Like I think that when people come into my comment section and they have an opinion on something, if it's a wrong opinion because it's what they've been taught, I also had that wrong opinion. I didn't like myself until I was 28 years old. So it makes sense to me why somebody who is thin and has never had to deal with being fat doesn't like a fat person, because you've literally been taught the same thing I was taught. But I had to unlearn it when I was 29, and I was motivated to do so because I was just tired of not being happy. So when I'm faced with those people, I think education can go a long way, just because they are learning and have learned the same things I learned. And why would I not take the time to teach them if I have a platform to do so? And I've had tons of people come back and be like, hey, you're right. And I'm like, I know I'm right. Like, I know I'm right. But for you to be able to see that is just as difficult as it was for me to be able to see that. Like, I was 26. I hated myself. I hated my body. I didn't want to be fat. I thought I couldn't be successful if I was fat. So it really makes so much sense to me that you as a thin person look at me fat and say, there's no reason you're this happy. Like, you shouldn't be this happy. Like, there's no way you should have a happy, healthy relationship. I thought all of those things too, because I was taught all of those things. So I try really hard to like educate. That's why I think my presence online is just important sometimes, because the whole world is not just fat people. The whole world is filled with people that don't think they deserve the things that they have. And it's like, you do, you know, we've just been taught that we don't in certain aspects. So yeah, erase, educate, eradicate.
My favorite of those three is your educating pillar there, because I just find it's really cool how you kind of go out on a limb and really educate people and post that comment and really talk about it and create a discussion and show like what people are actually saying on your videos and your photos. So respect for you for always doing that.
Yeah, I think it's just so important. And I don't think people realize the power in that. Like when you share, when you share that you were not being bullied, but when you share the misinformation that's being spread and you educate, you not only, it's not just for the person who needs to be educated, it's also for people to feel empowered to do so. Like, okay, I get it. you know, not everybody's trying to be mean. They just don't know or they don't understand. And if they are trying to be mean, that I've never wanted to be mean to a stranger in my life. Never in a million years. It doesn't matter how bad my life was. It doesn't matter how low I felt when I had no money. It doesn't matter. I've never wanted to be mean to a stranger. So in my mind, the fact that somebody wants to be mean to a stranger, I can't fathom what they've gone through, what where they're at in their life to want to do that. So like, you've got to have compassion. Like you've got to have a little, but at the same time, sometimes I just don't have the mental capacity to deal with it. And that's where Erase and Eradicate become my two go-tos. Like I don't have time to always be educating you. Like I don't have time to always be educating everybody, but I think sometimes it's important to draw light, have a conversation around it, and then just like let it go. Like just let it go. And I think that educating part for me has been like my ability to like less, see it less as a personal attack and more of an opportunity to be like, you don't know enough yet to like me. Mm-hmm. Like you don't know enough about me to like me yet. Like all you're seeing now is my body and who I am or on the outside. And like, you have no idea what a good person I am. So here's why I need you to stick around, or here's why what you're saying is wrong. Choose to be here if you want to. If you don't, you don't. And I'll have people that will come back and be like, I'm so sorry. Like I misjudged you. I am like, I do express, like everybody experiences fat phobia. Like everybody has that ingrained in them. So it's, people are just don't want to think it because they think that having fat phobia makes them a bad person. Yeah. But like, I'm a really great person. I was very fat phobic to myself for a very long time. Like I thought I didn't deserve a lot of things. So like, it's not about that. It's just about unlearning things. And yeah, it makes it less about me, which I think is important when you have a platform, because it can feel very personal, especially when you, I mean, you know that you work hard on a brand, you work hard to put things out. When people come for it, sometimes it's a personal attack. Yeah, so having my three E's allows me to see it from a business standpoint and like a more structured. So I'm just not taking it personally every single time it comes my way.
Yeah. Well, with 4.4 million followers on TikTok, I can't even imagine the comment section that you deal with. So like, do you monitor all of your comments, or is there people that will help you with that?
There is beauty in having too many, because there was a point on my TikTok where I had a huge following, but I didn't have too many comments that I could read every single one of them. I can't read every single one now. Yeah. So there's beauty in that. And there's a beauty in not knowing. Like ignorance is definitely bliss when it comes to like the comment sections. Do you know who does monitor my comment section? Scott.
Nice. Yeah.
He didn't for so long, and he didn't have TikTok for so long, but he finally dove in and got it and has been in my comment section. He has almost, I think he might actually have 300,000 followers on TikTok.
Wow, that's awesome.
He's posted one video. He just trolls my comment section on a regular basis.
He's
like,
and
he does not follow the 3E system. He's not educating anybody. He is not educating anybody. Yeah. He is most definitely putting people in their place.
Got your back.
Which is just also important, because I can't always be that person. Don't get me wrong. Sometimes I've told people where to go and how to get there, and I also don't mind doing that either. Like, you catch me on a wrong day, I'm going to tell you where to go, and then I'm going to eradicate you. Like, I'm going to make sure you hear me first, and then I'm going to get rid of you. But he also just doesn't have the heart for it, which is just a sin, because I've said meaner things to myself. Like, that's the luxury of growing up being mean to yourself and your body, is that there's literally nothing on this planet anybody could say to me that is meaner than anything I've said to myself. So when people come for me, it's like, cool, that's amateur. Like, you're not saying anything impactful at this moment. Whereas for him, he's seeing it as somebody saying it to me, who he loves, and he gets more hurt than I do. So yeah, he is in my comment section. So he's always troll Instagram and TikTok. He's on both now, which is just kind of nice. Like I have a saved folder of screenshot of comments that he says to people that are highly inappropriate. I like, one time he made a comment and I was like, babe, you literally have to check with me from now on. Like, you don't have free reign. You don't have free reign of just saying whatever you want on the internet. Yeah. I was like, you know, I need you to like keep it like sassy and classy. Like, those are my two go-tos. Like, if I'm saying something inappropriate, I'm also going to be classy about it. I was like, you can't be. Anyways, we've worked on it. But yeah, it is so funny. It's very different for the two of us, because I have that backbone. He just does not have it in him. Like, some nights I'll hear him being like, I'll be like, what is going on? And he's like, I'm on Instagram. Like, get out of my comments. Get out of my comments section. But yeah, no, he trolls it. But there definitely is ignorance ignorance is bliss in the comment section. So the more followers you do have, the luxury you do get is not being able to fall down that rabbit hole.
Oh, respect, Scott. You're a great husband. That's awesome. Very supportive. That's great. So it's really tough growing up, like just seeing all these like perfect people all the time doing a lot of the marketing for big brands. What brands do you think do a good job representing everyone?
I mean, realistically, a lot of the brands really stepped into the conversation of showing up for people over the last couple of years. Like I don't really look back and see a ton of brands really representing everybody. I think a lot of brands got called into the conversation this year, like not even just for fat bodies, but like BIPOC models, mm-hmm. like just in general, like and showcasing that. I'm just going to go on a limb here and say that no brand's doing enough.
Yeah,
like I really don't think that any brand is doing enough. And I think that that's a good thing. Like I think in the, one of the things that has got me through is like realizing that I'm not doing enough, because that just makes me work harder to do better. Mm-hmm. And I think living with the mindset that there's brands that are just not doing enough is important, because every single time you put something out there, it's just not enough. Like yeah. I did this course, I did this course with Bloom Academy. It was an online virtual course about diversity, equity, and inclusion. They have two tracks. They have a track for businesses, and then they have a track for influencers. And I did the influencer track. And they asked us to like picture, put yourself in the setting and picture these people. Like you're walking to the park, you see a couple sitting at the park bench, you see, a business person in the corner at the park, and they walked us through all of these, like this scenario. And then they were like, okay, what do the people look like? And I'm like, fuck, like a heterosexual couple. It was a businessman that I saw. And I'm just like, that's so against who I am. Like I believe in like business women, but we're so ingrained to only see and be inclusive to like what has shaped us that you don't really realize, like you have to try really hard to be inclusive. And then going back in my brain, I'm trying to be inclusive with the people that I saw, and I'm still excluding people. There's still people that aren't included in the diverse group that I'm putting in front of myself and picturing in my head. So that was a good eye-opening moment for me that it doesn't really matter. Often we're always excluding somebody. So it's just being clear and knowing that when we are doing it. But yeah, I don't really think that there's anybody that's really like necessarily groundbreaking, because this isn't groundbreaking. Like the ground's already been broke. People are just choosing not to be a part of it. Like whether or not you're joining the party now or later, it should have been done a long time ago for a lot of it. And I'm happy to see people moving that direction. I think that's so important. But living with the mindset that you're not doing enough, I think helps people to just like be better and not be, you know, so many brands, there's so much brands that will get into like, you know, one black creator that they'll use, or like just these little things. It's like, it's not about that. Like it's about all year round. I mean, going through Black History Month, and that's been my biggest learning curve, is just like, we just don't need to talk about it for 1 month. Like brands don't need to show up 1 month during Black History Month and have all black creators working for them through Black History Month. That's tokenism. Like that's not showing up. That's just choosing it when it's looks good for you. Yep. So I think that it's one of those things that brands aren't doing enough to just do it all of the time and without being asked.
That's a great point.
Yeah. Like just without being asked. And I don't know if we'll ever actually see it. Like I think things are getting better, but I'm a fat white woman that has a lot of privilege in the content creating world and with the brands that I work with. And so I have a lot of luxury when it comes to that. So I might think it's getting better, but I'm not a marginalized group of people. So, and from what I heard and what I've listened to and just what I've seen over the last couple of days, like racism and all of that stuff in terms of inclusion is very prevalent and still existing in the world. And I think it's like, I'm just going to keep living and creating. Like I'm not doing enough to be inclusive. And I think a lot of brands should stick with that too.
Like, yeah. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I like what you said about Lulu too, and how you're able to call them out of it with that one and everything. That's very cool that they were to do that with like, it's $1 billion.
Well, they knew they were late. Like they knew they were late to the conversation. They also had a lot of shit go on with their old CEO who said some pretty inappropriate things about fat women in general and has made some pretty racist remarks. I mean, he's no longer the CEO, but he's still, it's how business works. He's still a partner in the brand. He has no say, but he's still a part of it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there are businesses opening their doors in 2022 that haven't given fat people a thought. 2022, they're opening their doors now. I'm not going to begrudge a company that 2 years decided to include us in the conversation. And I think that I'm not here to heal people's relationships with brands. I think sometimes brands do so much damage that you just can't come back with from that. Like, I'm not here to heal the relation. Like, I had a woman reach out to me to tell me how, you know, how traumatizing it was to be her size when she was a kid and not be able to fit in certain things and all of her friends were purchasing. I can't heal that for you, but I can be a part of the impact that when a 16-year-old walks through the doors of Lululemon now, there's going to be something
available
there, right? Yeah. Which is different. And so that's the hard part about working with brands in general is, like, one, not everybody likes every brand I'm going to work for. And I mean, that's just that, again, not going to please everybody. Not everybody's going to be happy with what I do, but I do it with intention. Yeah. Again, never doing enough, but I do it with intention. I try really hard to seek feedback and vet my brands before I work with them to see how inclusive their websites are and see, you know, what they're trying to do and where their growth is going. But every piece of feedback that I've given Lululemon since the day I started working for them has happened. So,
that's really cool.
Well, I don't want to think that I'm the person that's pushed that button, but I know so many people are asking for it that it's making a difference and things are starting to change. So hopefully in the near future, the sizing will grow because they've built enough confidence in the plus size community to be able to offer more sizing. Yep. But it takes time, and it's, you know, I'm willing to do that. And I don't begrudge anybody who's not, and I get it. Like, I know I'm going to sell things that you're just not interested in or might go against what you necessarily not believe in, because I hope that I don't do anything that's, like, makes people morally question, like, my values. But I think, too, like, sometimes we don't know people's past or the things that they've gone through that, like, you know, I get it. You've been hurt by the brand that I work with, but I'm not hurt by the brand, and I'm trying to hope that in the future the brand hurts less people. And, like, I think that that's important to be a part of, because Lululemon is going to exist whether or not I'm a part of it. It's the brand is huge. Like, whether or not I'm giving my feedback or not, Lulu's going to continue to go on. So at least I can have my feet in with the brand, having conversations and building some of those bridges back up between the plus size community and the brand itself.
That's really cool. When I grew up, I was about 260 at my highest, 265 when I was playing football and stuff. And I was really self-conscious all the time. So what would you tell someone that would deal with that? Like, any self-confidence tips that you'd give?
That your body is the least interesting thing about you. I think I lived the majority of my life thinking that my body was the most interesting thing and that my happiness depended on it. And I was so wrong. You know, I was the thinnest I had ever been or had ever been when I walked across this stage in the bikini competition, and I still felt shitty. Like, it didn't matter. People gave me attention, sure. People treated me differently, yeah. But, like, who wants to be treated differently by somebody? Because, and then having that moment to be like, okay, you're only treating me differently because I'm thin? Well, you're not the type of person that I'm interested in, you know, being friends with or... So I think really separating your body from who you are was the most impactful thing for me. And I think a lot of people need to start living their lives that way. Your body is going to change forever. Your body is the least consistent thing about who you are and will forever be the least consistent thing about who you are. You're going to be 80 one day and your body is going to look completely different. So if you base your life off of this body that is never going to be consistent, then you're never going to feel consistent about yourself. That's just how it works. Like, they're all correlated. So, I had a little love me journal that I would write little things in about myself that had nothing to do with my body. Like, you're a great friend. Today you handled a really shitty situation well. Like, you're great at problem solving. Like, it was all of these really cool things. And all of a sudden I was like, holy crap, like, I'm pretty cool. Like, yeah. I have a lot of really good things about me. Like, I had based it all off of my body that the world saw as bad. And then all of a sudden I had this book and I'm like, yeah, but, like, look at this. Like, cool, I'm fat, but, like, look at this, because this is the thing that is, like, most important about me. And these are the things. And then in turn, it made me respect my body more, because I literally couldn't be any of these things without my body. So it was this, you know, very good circle of things that intertwine. But looking back on it now, and just advice for people who are struggling with their bodies, it's like, well, you're struggling with your body because you're focusing on your body. And when you start to focus on something and the things about you that don't change, that will be consistent, it doesn't matter if I'm 150 pounds or if 250 pounds or I'm going to be a good friend. That's not going to change. And we put too much power in the things that change about us and not the things that should be staying consistent. Like,
great advice.
You're focused on being thin. Like, how about you just focus on being a better person? Like,
that's
where your time should be spent.
But. Yeah, no, it's great advice. I liked what you posted the other day about strangers in the beach thing. And like, I've never posted a shirtless pic because I'm just not confident enough to do that. But I really liked that post because it was very real. And like, why do we give these strangers so much power of what we do and where we go or how we act or...
And most of the time, strangers are just thinking about themselves. Like, I think that's been like the biggest eye opener for having my platform is that most people are so worried about themselves that they're too busy to worry about you in general. Yeah. Like, you know, and we do give strangers too much power. We give them the opportunity to like say things and do things to hurt our feelings, but they literally don't know us.
Yeah, true.
They have nothing, nothing. My mom said to me one time, "You don't care what I say about you, so why would you care what a stranger says about you?" And it's like, true, because some days I don't care what she says about, like, you know, my clothing or the decisions I make. I know better about myself. I need to trust that in certain situations. So how do you get, if you don't care what your mom says, you know, why do you care what a stranger says? And like, that was a good eye-opener for me because I'm like, because sometimes I'm like, no, mom, like, you don't know what you're talking about. But then a stranger says and I'm like, whoa, I'm so upset. But it's like, how does that make any sense?
How do they get the power?
Yeah, like how have you given somebody who knows nothing about you power over what you do?
Yeah, no, it was a great, anyone that hasn't seen that video, check it out on Alicia's Instagram, but it's a really good video just about strangers and getting power, but I thought it was very powerful. If you could go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice, what would it be?
I wouldn't give myself advice. I would give myself the little book that I wrote, all of the things that I liked about myself. Nice. That's what I'd do. Yeah. Like, I would just give that book and be like, there's a lot of cooler things that you could be focusing on than your body. I think I needed that when I was 21. I think I would have found my passion earlier. I think I would have focused on the right things earlier. I think I never would have suppressed my creativity. I think I would have done more for myself had I just not focused on my body. So I'd give her that little book and I'd say read these things and start focusing on them, because that's what made the biggest difference in my life and the path that I'm now on, I guess. Yeah,
that's awesome. Well, it's been an amazing conversation. I really appreciate you coming on.
It was literally 2 hours, but
no, that was great. Thanks to everyone that's listened. That was a very, very, very great chat. I really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me.
So many gems, so much great advice. So everyone that isn't following Alicia on Instagram and Twitter and TikTok and everywhere, be sure to follow her. And thank you for listening to the 8th episode of the East Coast Podcast. Thanks, Alicia.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers. This podcast is presented to you by the Atlantic Region Jeep Dealers. We had a great first year, 2021, with Jeep. We're stoked to sign up for another year with Jeep. We've got tons of missions planned. We just got back from Cape Breton from a great time up there at Cape Smoky. Be sure to follow along on Instagram for all of our latest missions this year. Cheers.